Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 143 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the vision to my Wanda, Brian. Brian, how are you this week, my friend?
I'm going to tell you something. This week has had everything. It's had ups, it's had downs, it's had sideways, it's had fourth dimensions. It's been crazy.
I think what really can emphasize how crazy this week has been is the fact that since our last episode, Donald Trump was acquitted in his impeachment trial, and I don't even think we plan on talking about that.
No shit, ain't that truth? Yeah, I mean, we literally are living in a world where the news cycle has... it's operating at a hyperspeed, and it's one of the issues with a current events themed show, which is the fact that by the time this episode is live for 48 hours, 72 hours, it's almost irrelevant because there are now so many more things that are important to talk about. It's, our attention span is getting shorter and shorter as a society, and I can't help but think that you and I are playing our part in that.
I hope we contribute to the downfall of American civilization. That really was when we started this almost 3 years ago. I think that was kind of our plan.
Can you believe we're coming up on 3 years?
3 year anniversary is less than 3 months away. That is crazy.
The question is, are we doing something for 3 years? Or are we doing for some our big episode 150?
We'll have to discuss that. Maybe, why not both? I think maybe a cake for 150, but the big event is 3 years, personally.
What is the traditional third anniversary gift?
I'll have to look
in. It's not paper.
It's not paper. Paper is 1 year. It's not gold. I want to say
it is... Plugs?
I was going to go fleshlight, but maybe we'll have to get some clarification on that.
I'm going butt plugs. I'm going butt plugs. I think
in the meantime, though, let's get things rolling with drink of the week.
Drink of the week.
Nazdrovia.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Slasher.
Who's
drink of the week. Drink of the week, drink of the week.
All right, Brian, you're actually, you've got a glass this week. You're very, very fancy. So tell me what you are bringing to the table to drink.
We're going to call this one Ebb's Lager Number 2. And when you say, Brian, tell me more about Ebb's Lager Number 2, I'll say, please. Sure. Why don't I? It's deep gold with a slight grain/cereal sweetness with a touch of honey, noble hops in the nose. I would describe this as a medium to full mouthfeel with a pilsner, almost with a slight caramel note and topped with a smooth hop character, accented by mild grassy herbal notes.
Very nice. Take a sip. I have often described you as a medium to full mouthfeel as well.
Asshole. It also comes in at ABV, a very low 4.1. However, coming out of Brooklyn, New York, I will accept that.
All right. Sip it. Let me know what you think. Come on. Talk to me.
Yeah, that's just fucking good.
All right.
I'm sorry. I'm about lagers. I'm about pilsners. I'm about an honest American beer.
There you go. Ironically enough, Brian, I also am bringing a lager to the table tonight. We were out to see our good friends at Broken Goblet Brewing this past Sunday for their Valentine's Day brunch, which was very, very good. And thankfully, they still had leftover from their recent canning run. Oh, it's made a comeback. It's the Lager King.
No.
Oh,
no.
Yes. Clocking in at solid, crisp 4.9%. I had called this my beer of the summer. Fuck it. It's my beer of the winter now, too.
You're bringing Lager King to the table?
Oh, yeah. So good.
Okay. Fans,
Fans of the show
know that you know, this is the beer that got us through the worst of the pandemic.
True. It got us through the height of the refrigerated trucks, the forklifts, all of that. It really bridged a gap in our lives, and I'm happy to have it again. Do you have any of your in your apartment still, Brian?
I have one that I've been saving.
Maybe I might have a few. I may have bought a case, so I might have some extra when you come to visit next.
You saved me some?
We'll see what we can do.
In a world where you actually have a real friend.
In a world where you have a fridge just for your beer.
By the way.
What?
I would like to apologize to Tap Room.
So the Tap Room, which you had besmirched after they went to UPS for their shipping, you were upset by that.
I was. That was my beef of the week 2 weeks ago, maybe three. I'm not completely taking back my complaint. I don't like the fact that they're shipping via UPS.
Okay.
It takes away the what I liked about them, which was that there was a small business that I was supporting. Anywho, I found out that the beer they ship out is not refrigerated first.
Ah, good.
So it is room temperature beer that they are shipping out via UPS. However, I did have to sign up for my UPS, which charges $12.99 a year, so that I could have it shipped directly to a UPS center rather than having it delivered to my home, because somebody has to be home to sign it.
See, I have my UPS and I don't think I pay for it.
You have an account, but to have the change delivery option is where you have to sign up, is where you have to upcharge for.
Okay.
So this week I decided to just say, fuck it. I'm going to continue the Tap Room subscription. I received my February variety box earlier this week, and I'm going to stick with it. I'm not going to give up on it.
A lot of people don't know, in college, your nickname was February Variety Box.
Fuck you.
Oh, and doing the shot as well. What do we drink?
So this is only a 4.4. I went with Maker's Mark.
Nice. Makers or Maker's 46?
Maker's Mark.
All right. Nothing wrong with that.
We've spoken about this before, Ron. Where you go high, I go low. You go with the special editions, I go with the generic shit that they sell at every liquor store.
There you go. And a good comment here. You don't need to do that with FedEx, which is very true. I can have shipments rerouted to my local FedEx store at no charge. So maybe you need to have a conversation with Tap Room about shifting from UPS to FedEx. Although FedEx, I just hate them anyway.
That was your beef of the week about four times, sir.
Been a few times. But in the meantime, enough about beefing. We'll get to our current beefs of the week. But of course, we got to get into This Week in Racism.
This week in
racism.
So much racism again this week, Brian. We're going to start off in Youngstown, Ohio. The black owner of 14 McDonald's franchises says the company has shown more favorable treatment to white owners and denied him the opportunity to buy restaurants in more affluent communities, according to a civil rights lawsuit filed Tuesday in federal court. The lawsuit filed by Herbert Washington, a former Michigan State University track star who played for parts of two seasons with the Oakland Athletics in the mid-1970s, said the Chicago-based company's discriminatory practices has led to a $700,000 sales gap between black-owned franchises and those owned by white people. Franchises in low-income neighborhoods cost more to operate, have higher employee turnover, and are not as profitable, the lawsuit said. Quote, by relegating black owners to the oldest stores in the toughest neighborhoods, McDonald's ensured that black franchisees would never achieve the levels of success that white franchisees could expect, the lawsuit said. Black franchisees must spend more to operate their stores, while white franchisees get to realize the full benefit of their labors. More than 50 former Black McDonald's franchise owners made similar claims to Washington's in a lawsuit filed against the company in September, saying they were forced to sell around 200 stores in the last decade. McDonald's has denied the allegations, saying that the blame lies with, quote, years of mismanagement by Mr. Washington, whose organization has failed to meet many of our standards on people, operations, guest satisfaction, and reinvestment.
Now, not trying to hijack this week in racism, because we know this is a very important bit.
But and you would never take us on a tangent.
Never. I do not believe in tangents.
No.
Now, Mike, do you think that Quiznos, I mean, you've never hid the fact that you had a very successful experience in the franchising industry. Do you feel that Quiznos treated you fairly, or do you think that they set you up to fail?
I think Quiznos pretty much screwed everybody over equally.
Thank you. I just needed to hear that. Back to the bit.
All right. Going over to the UK, the chair of Big Four accounting firm KPMG has resigned after allegedly telling staff to stop moaning about the COVID-19 pandemic and that unconscious bias was, quote, complete crap. Bill Michael will step down from the audit giant at the end of the month after details of what he said during a virtual staff meeting were revealed. The senior partner is again reported to have told staff to, quote, stop moaning and, quote, playing the victim card when it came to the pandemic in a call with around a third of the firm's 1,500 employees. He also reportedly spoke about meeting clients for coffee during the pandemic. On a side note, he was admitted to the hospital with COVID in 2020. He was again also reported to have described the unconscious bias as, quote, complete crap. The decision to leave the company comes 2 days after Mr. Michael stepped aside while KPMG investigated his remarks.
Well, I can't really say I'm shocked by bad behavior by an accounting firm.
No, not at all. Going out to Brentwood, California, an Asian woman captured a man's racist rant against her after he approached her unprovoked and unmasked in the street this past week. The woman, who goes by M on social media, shared the video on Twitter, which shows the man walking up to her and calling her a, quote, stupid blue hair Asian girl and dumb bitch. He then raises his middle finger to the camera and says, fuck you, 4 times. Things didn't get much better when she reported the incident to the LAPD, as she was reportedly told it would have been easier if he swung at you and that, quote, being threatened is subjective. M said, the officer told me that not wearing a mask is not threatening and deemed it relevant to mention that he, quote, grew up with Japanese people. The man was eventually identified as Mike Dawson, which resulted in him being fired from his job at Redondo Beach Real Estate Company, Beach City Brokers.
Yeah.
Coming yet again.
Now, does M realize she's about 3 letters away from being Q?
I mean, that's one way to look at it. Going down to Cape Coral, Florida, an Island Coast high school teacher who allegedly told students that slaves were not whipped by white people and that the N-word, a racist slur, just means ignorant, has been suspended with pay. The district is investigating 3 viral TikTok videos, which were allegedly taken during an advanced placement government course. In one clip, the teacher can be heard saying that white people wouldn't whip slaves. In another, the teacher incorrectly identifies the N-word as another word for ignorant, not being well-read, or not being well-educated. Betsy Vaughn, vice chair of the Lee County School Board, also commented that the student could face potential discipline for recording the teacher and posting the videos online. That will be some straight white bullshit.
That's the kind of white bullshit. And that's the kind of shit that they would actually be stupid enough to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In Wisconsin, a white woman vying to become Wisconsin's school superintendent shut down her Twitter account amid backlash over her sharing a story of being called the N-word, with critics calling her post tone deaf. The controversial post late Tuesday by candidate Deborah Kerr came in response to a tweet from the co-host of a podcast called Race Through Education. Quote, "When was the first time someone called you the N-word?" Madison Payton tweeted to his 6,400 plus followers. Kerr wrote in response, according to screenshots, again, keep in mind, Kerr is white. She said, "I was 16 in high school and white. My lips were bigger than most, and that was the reference given to me." Reaction to Kerr's post of the day of the so the post was on the day of the primary. The response was swift, with several users saying the question wasn't intended for white people. Kerr started to block people on Twitter before eventually shutting down her account. Somewhat unsurprisingly, Kerr placed second in Tuesday's seven-person primary, meaning that she will advance to the April 6th election.
I'm sorry, I stopped listening when you said that this guy has 6,000 followers on Twitter.
Hold on. 6,400 plus followers, yes.
How the fuck does he have that many followers on Twitter and we don't? Bullshit. I call bullshit. We are bringing top-notch entertainment. We are bringing racism. We're exposing racism. We're highlighting tolerance. We're listening. We're sitting down and listening. We're taking down the racist institutions.
Exactly.
And this guy with his bullshit fraud of a podcast has got 60. How many did he buy?
We'll look into that later, but let's go on to page two of our racism this week. In Indianapolis, Indiana, the president of the Indianapolis Museum of Art at Newfields has resigned after the institution posted a job listing seeking a new head who would maintain the museum's, quote, traditional core white art audience, according to a report. The wording was a bullet point in a six-page job description that also said the museum was working to attract a more diverse audience. However, museum officials removed the word white over the weekend following outrage, including from guest curators of an exhibit on a Black Lives Matter mural in Indianapolis. The ousted president, Charles Venable, told the Indianapolis Star earlier that the decision to use white had been intentional to show the museum wouldn't abandon its existing audience as it works for more diversity.
Oh, you know, it's so bizarre. What hole have these people been living in that they think that in 2021 it is okay to just throw out such overt racism professionally?
They've been living in a white art hole, Brian, clearly.
All right, well done. Well done.
Well, we've gone a couple of weeks without a story of police killing an unarmed black man, but no longer. In San Clemente, California, a new video shows the fatal shooting of a black man after homeless outreach deputies stopped him for jaywalking in California last year. The 12-minute clip, a combination of dash cam, cell phone, and surveillance footage, shows two Orange County Sheriff's deputies watching 42-year-old Kurt Reinhold on a sidewalk in San Clemente from their police cruiser. Quote, "Watch this, he's going to jaywalk," one of the cops says as they pull up to Reinhold. The other responds, "Don't make case law." When the pair get out of their cruiser to approach the man, the dash cam footage doesn't capture the interaction, but one of the cops can be heard asking, "Are you going to stop or are we going to have to make you stop?" Cell phone video captured by a witness from across the street shows the cops attempting to direct Reinhold back to the sidewalk. The clip then shows the cops arguing with an increasingly aggravated Reinhold before tackling him to the ground. At one point during the struggle, one of the cops yells, "He's got my gun," prompting the other deputy to open fire, according to the department. Two shots can then be heard in the cell phone footage. The Orange County District Attorney's Office is still investigating the shooting.
Ugh.
I feel that's like the go-to line, like, "He's got my gun." Like in South Park when they did the joke of, "He's coming right at me so you can shoot." Like, yeah. I feel. And have you seen what the cops are doing with the live Instagram videos now?
No, what?
So it was, I think, Kentucky and I think L.A. had situations where citizens were filming them and putting it on Instagram Live, and the cops started playing like Beatles songs or something from their cell phone so that the Instagram filter would be triggered to shut off the video because it's copyrighted music.
Clever. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, dick behavior, absolutely dick behavior, but that is clever. See, I heard that you're supposed to use Disney music. It'll get taken down much faster if you use Disney. I've heard that approach. The fact that police officers, while carrying out their official duties, are doing that, totally dick behavior, but you know, you got to respect it.
But Brian, you live in New York City. You walk a lot. How many times in a given week would you say you jaywalk?
Oh, fuck. Multiple times on a daily basis.
And have you ever been stopped?
Never. Dom got stopped.
I see that. Dom got stopped for jaywalking in California. Billy brings up a good point. The cops could also play Sir Mix-a-Lot songs on Instagram, because as we found out ourselves, that will get you taken down off of the air right away.
Fortunately, that took down After Dark, and it wasn't the actual regular episode of the podcast. But yeah, Dom's been stopped by jaywalking. I have never been stopped by jaywalking.
No, neither
have I. I've been stopped by jaywalking while carrying a knife and having drugs on me. And just like right in front of a police officer. The cop car had been parked at the corner, and I just went against the light. That is what I would define as white privilege.
Yes, without a doubt. And we got one more. We've got Racism Rewind.
Racism Rewind.
All right. Misdemeanor charges were tossed out earlier this week against Amy Cooper, the Central Park Karen who falsely accused a black bird watcher of threatening her after she completed a handful of therapy sessions. Cooper had faced up to a year in prison on the charge of falsely reporting an incident in the third degree, but a judge granted Manhattan prosecutors' request to dismiss Cooper's case after she completed 5 therapy sessions designed for introspection and progress. Assistant DA Joan Eluzzi Orban said at a brief virtual hearing that the diversion program that she completed was consistent with other misdemeanor cases. Also important to note, Christian Cooper, the man Amy Cooper falsely accused, had refused to cooperate in her prosecution, saying that he felt she already paid a steep price following global outrage over the incident.
What do you think about that? Please answer, because I know.
I feel she got off easy. Like 5 therapy sessions. Again, now I also feel the fact that the victim did not want her to be prosecuted also weighs into it as well. So again, I think she lost her job. Like she became, I think, pretty much hated around the world. So I mean, there was a level of punishment there, but again, we just talked about white privilege. I think, you know, she got a break that maybe a minority in a similar situation may not have gotten.
Okay.
What do you think?
Affliction?
Confliction.
Am I echoing? I hear an echo.
I don't know. I'm not hearing an echo from you.
I hear an echo. I believe that we should be going out of our way to take nonviolent lawbreakers and try to educate them in a way so that they do not commit crimes again. I think that we have a jail system, a prison system that is overloaded. It is echoing. God damn it. Sorry. All
right. You're going to hop out and hop back in. I mean, again, there's been a lot of talk about this week and people saying, you know, yes, it's good that, you know, we are giving offenders a chance to, you know, not have to do prison time or jail time or anything like that. But again, you know, everyone is pointing out how it's a white person that seems to have benefited from this, whereas the black community doesn't seem to be getting the same breaks.
And I think that those breaks need to be afforded to a wider range of people that have been charged with crimes.
All right.
You know, I just think, this isn't about defunding the police. It's not what I'm talking about on this front. I just feel like There are people that make bad decisions that break the laws, and they don't belong in jail. If I had been stopped for jaywalking, I don't believe I should have gone to jail.
There are plenty of other reasons you should have gone to jail, but the jaywalking, no.
I mean, it was that whole manslaughter thing.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? All right.
Talk about getting off easy on that.
Let's keep it moving. We've got Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bugging you this week?
Snowflakes. Weak people. Lack of constitution. Lack of the ability of people to allow a difference of opinion.
Do earlier you have today, you have an example of this?
I do.
All right.
Earlier today, and we're going to talk about Rush Limbaugh later on.
Don't worry.
We're going to save the Rush Limbaugh outrage for later. This morning, I woke up and noticed that a person that you and I are both familiar with,
who has actually been on the podcast.
Would you say friend of the show?
I think that's going a bit far.
I think that dude fucking hates us. He Probably. Should. If he does, I don't think, if he doesn't hate us, he should fucking hate
He's
us.
He's not paying attention.
Anyway, I woke and so this gentleman who shall remain nameless, but he's been on the show.
Go back through the logs, yeah.
So this guy decided to wake up this morning, and this wasn't from last night. He genuinely woke up this morning, spooned out the skull from his wife's lower lip, and emptied it out, rinsed it, gave it a little wash, and decided to post a tribute to Rush Limbaugh.
Yep.
I was not in the mood for that. I also sat there and just said, how can I troll this kid? So I just decided to go short and sweet. And I said that he was an awful human being. The world is better without him. And I posted it.
Yes, I saw the post. I saw it.
And we know, and he has a lot of conservative friends on his Facebook page that regularly circle jerk each other over to watching, people suffering in this world, so long as they don't have to pay taxes. I then mentioned it to you, and you jumped on in true Ron fashion. Elevated the Pope. You turned my attempt to be a feeble attempt at trolling, and you really just schooled this kid as to what a piece of garbage Rush Limbaugh was.
I did okay.
I think, well, you did what you definitely elevated what I'd done.
All right, fair.
You got to take the credit where you can.
Oh, all right.
Within 20 minutes, this kid had deleted our comments.
Bitch.
The fact that we live in a world where it is considered acceptable or the fact that you or that there's people out there that want to create this little safe space on their social media where all they want to do is echo opinions that they hold and that they do not want any type of open dialogue. A differencing of opinions, people listening as opposed to talking. And the fact that there's people out there that are so weak that they can't just allow to be involved in people disagreeing with them. It just set me off for the rest of the day.
As it should have. You don't silence people, especially not you, Brian.
No, what I like to do is engage.
Yes.
One of the things that I most enjoy doing, and Dom here can attest to it, is I like to take the stance on social media of being uber woke and then finding comments and twisting them to implying that they are racist in nature, even when they're really not. But I love doing that. And Dom and I will get into it on Facebook or Instagram. And it's genuinely one of the fun things that I do.
And even Billy attests to that. He says, last week, Brian took the contrarian point of view on a post I made and started arguing with my sister. I had to let her know that Brian was just trying to stir stuff up and actually agrees with her.
What was it? It was something. I was arguing something about freedom and how we can't be forced to do things. And all I remember was that I saw Billy's sister had posted. I was like, oh, I don't want to fuck with her. No.
I got the wrong person upset.
Yeah, I even went with the Mel Gibson gif. Oh, that was it. Gina Carano. Are we even going to talk? We talked about that last week.
That's already a week out. So my beef, Brian, I'm going to keep it nice and simple, Brian. Snow. I'm done with the fucking snow this winter. Got another 8 inches of snow today. And after it snowed, we got just enough freezing rain to just, you know, basically harden everything over. So I'm done. I'm ready for spring to be here.
Ron, if you would like another 5 3/4 inches, just let me know.
I will keep you on speed dial, my friend.
Thank you. Listen, this is winter. You've got to expect it. It's,
I know.
I think what happened is that we had a very easy December. We had a very easy January. And February has just treated us like a bitch.
Kicking our ass. Hands down, kicking our ass.
Very much so. Very much so.
Ron? So what do we want to get into first? We got a few topics to get to here tonight. Did we want to get the stocks out of the way real quick?
Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Or should I say boom, boom, stocks?
Stonks.
So it was a rough week in the market. Ron and Brian portfolio still up, but not as up as we were a couple days ago. But
you had us up as of, I believe, on Friday. When we closed out on Friday, we were up over 50%
from our within initial a month. Investment. Yes.
Of our original investment within 1 month of investing,
yes.
Which is really impressive when you think about it.
I mean, it's not bad. It's not bad. But it took a bit
and
of
what's happened since, Ron?
You know, some stocks go up, stocks go down. You know, they'll go back up. I feel good about next week. But we have started to get into the area of penny stocks. A little risky. So we will mention that right off of the bat, but we have two stocks in the penny range that we're riding to hopefully early retirement. So we're going to share these with you real quick. The first one is HQ Global Education, trades under the code HQGE, closing today at a hair under 2 cents, 0.0189 to be exact.
Ron, can I ask you a question? How many shares of this stock do you own?
So I will tell you that I am in big in it. I doubled my position earlier this week. I am now at 100,000 shares of this. And I feel like we're gonna make a little run here. Anyway, HQ Global Education, they acquired Big M Entertainment Pictures, which is a full service film and TV production located in the heart of LA. They also are an industry pioneer in the field of online content and micro budget film creation, currently engaged in a number of projects being created specifically for concurrent or integrated release, both in theaters and for home viewing or on personal devices. So content is king these days, Brian. I think you know that. You look at all of the channels that are available, all of what is available online. And, you know, if this thing runs to 60 cents, we're making a nice little profit on this, starting off under 2 cents. So, I mean, the long-term play could get up to $3 to $5. So again, if you are going to get into this, know that it is risky and know that you're going to be holding it for a while, but could be a nice payoff there. And then the second one, and this is one I love even better, Brian. He's walking away because he knows I talked to him about this so much during the day. This is Labor Smart, trading under the code LTNC. Just close to a hair over a penny, 0.0115. This one I am now in, Brian, 200,000 shares deep. This is, I think I might be on the board. I think that's how many shares I own right now. Anyway, so they're going a little bit crazy. They provide on-demand temp labor to a variety of industries, primarily blue collar. They recently announced the decision that they're going to start accepting Bitcoin and Ethereum as payment methods for its services. They're in acquisition mode. In fact, there is a Zoom call tomorrow at 4 p.m. About them acquiring a beverage company with a hydrogen-infused bottled water product.
It's not Tap Room. They're not buying Tap Room.
They're not buying Tap Room, but apparently this hydrogen water is supposed to be the next big thing for athletes, NFL, NBA, all that stuff. And they are also in talks of acquiring a hedge fund as well that is struggling. So they are, this is a company with a great balance sheet, a lot of money, a lot of ability to, bring companies in. And the CEO has pledged not to do a stock split in 2021. So if the stock continues to go up, it will maintain its value through the entire year. This is another one that, if it runs to a buck, we've made ourselves some money.
At what point do we just go and say, you know what, we want to buy 1 million shares?
I mean, we'll see how it rolls. You know, we've got some other penny stocks that we could potentially be looking at in the future. But these two are a couple I really like.
I like it.
They are very risky. And if you're going to hold them, you're going to be holding them for a long period of time. I think Billy's trying to start a conspiracy theory out there. Ron says he's employed. And then a few weeks later, promoting a stock for a company that provides temp labor. Coincidence?
That's pretty good. That is very observant.
And then, Brian, you did not send out the After Dark email?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, what people are talking about is if you are a Patreon subscriber and you're at the bronze level or higher, you do get access to Ron and Brian After Dark, which will take place later tonight at 9:30. So you can always go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. In the upper right-hand corner, it'll tell you how to become a Patreon subscriber and join us. It's always a lot of fun, the After Dark, so we're getting ready for it. I may bring another Lager King to the After Dark just to rub Brian's nose in it even more. But Brian, what else do we have this week? Where do we want to go? We've got a number of topics.
I think we start off with, what are you watching?
Okay.
Because there is a show that you and I both watched. Then I think we go to Texas and we close out with celebrity deaths.
All right. We don't want to talk about my shot.
Well, you've been talking about shooting your shot forever. Talk to me, Ron. Ron, you appear different this week. You look, how do I say this? There seems to be something about your blood that's coursing through your body that feels, how do I say, familiar?
I don't want to say I feel stronger, healthier, better than others, but I was fortunate enough last Saturday to get my first shot of the Moderna COVID vaccine. So there are now, I feel the antibodies building in my system right now, and I'm just a short 3 weeks away from getting that sweet, sweet second shot of vaccine.
Now, keep in mind, I cannot get my 88-year-old father an appointment in New York State. That is how fucked up this whole rollout has been.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue that point.
But I go on every day, and it's just, there's lots of places that supposedly have it. There are no places to make appointments. But tell me about it. What did you have any side effects, any symptoms? Were you able to crush heavy objects in your hands?
It was fairly simple.
Did you turn green? Can you just allow me to just kind of go on a riff? Did you at any point tell your wife that she shouldn't make you angry? And that she won't like you when you become angry. And then you literally grow out of your clothes, ripping them at their core.
Nothing like that.
As you become
I went to my local Rite Aid, got my shot. They said, hang out for 15 minutes in case you have an allergic reaction, which I did not. And went home. It was a little, you know, it was sore. The arm was sore for a couple days. But other than that, we're good to go. Yes, and Billy makes a good point. People do say the second Moderna shot is apparently the one that makes people feel ill for a day or so. So I'm good with that.
When are you going for the second shot?
The second shot will be March 13th.
Ooh, I'm supposed to visit you the weekend before, but what do you think about pushing it for that weekend? So I can go, we can videotape it. I can witness the side effects. I can spit in your mouth so you have some naturally procured antibodies.
I have to wait the full 4 weeks. So unfortunately, I don't think that's going to work for you. I guess I should real quick follow up on last week's Beef of the Week and let people know that my brother did get out of the hospital this week. He is COVID negative, pneumonia negative. He did not end up with any scarring on his lungs, which they are worried about, and he is feeling much better. So, and my mother also feeling a lot better. She'll be going to her doctors on Tuesday, meeting with her radiologist and oncologist. So hopefully everything is on track there as well.
Good. That's actually, you know what? In a world where everything's gone to shit, it's nice to hear some good news.
This week was a much better week than last week. Clearly, because my beef was only snow. So if that is the worst thing in my week, so be it.
Now, did you actually shovel your own snow today?
I did, yes. I shovel.
Why do you still do that? Why don't you just hire like a service to come over?
You know, it keeps me active. And I always say the money you spend to do things you can do when you're able is the money you don't have to spend when you're not able. Think about that.
I need to move in with you when I hit 60. I need to move in with you when I hit 60.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we're watching.
Ron?
It was a week. It was a week of watching stuff.
Ron?
Yes.
What are you watching?
Well, we both watched the same thing on Netflix.
Yes.
We watched the docuseries Crime Scene, The Vanishing, at the Cecil Hotel, which is the story of Elisa Lam, who was there visiting from Vancouver, mysteriously disappeared, and then was found dead in a water tank on the top of the roof of the hotel. But they had also had a very weird video of her in one of the hotel elevators, so it became like this big conspiracy theory thing, and they dragged this thing out over four episodes. Yeah.
This should have been a 90-minute documentary. I mean, the story is actually quite interesting. This woman who is single, she is 21, young, wants to travel, visit Los Angeles. She decides to stay in a cheap hotel in downtown Los Angeles, which happens to be the worst neighborhood in all of Los Angeles.
Skid Row. Yeah, let's say.
And obviously there's criminal activity. There's drug use, you know, going on. There's drug sales going on, and this girl who's staying by herself is there for a couple days, and as Ron just said, she goes missing. And 19 days later, this is the part you left out. So she's missing for 19 days. The cops have searched. There's, you know, wanted posters. This is actually national news that she's missing. The, the people that stay in a hotel. God damn it. How did I forget that fucking word? The hotel guests start complaining that the water pressure in their rooms is incredibly weak and that the water tastes a little funny, which I imagine is someone who is, you know, recently re-engaged in the hotel industry is something you would be very sensitive to. So the guests at the hotel start saying like, yeah, the water's a little funny. They send one of the maintenance workers up to go look at the water towers. There's four of them, and they go up to, he checks all four of them, and he sees in one of them this girl that's been missing for 3 weeks, literally decomposed and bobbing in the water of the tank. Naked, naked. She's already pulled off all of her clothes.
Right. This was, so my gripe about the show, not only for it being too long, I agree with you. It could have been 90 minutes, could have been two episodes. Like, they really dig deep into the conspiracy theory part of it and try and make it seem like there was more to it than there was. And they're interviewing like YouTubers and web sleuths and things like that, that are giving their take as to why they feel there was something nefarious, that someone, you know, else caused her death and everything else. And then we get to like the final episode where they're like, well, you know, she was just suffering from depression. She got off her meds. She had a manic episode. It ended up, you know, and then all the people that they had been interviewing for the entire four shows that have been like pushing their theories to how she died at the end, we're like, yeah. And then we just realized we were wrong.
Well, did you see, what was the show? Don't Fuck with Cats. Did you see that?
I have not watched that yet. No.
Okay. I highly recommend it. Don't watch it when the wife is around, because we know that she does not like animal abuse. But that was a documentary very similar to how this was done. But in this was a story of a guy who is seeking internet fame, is killing people, and decides that he is going to gain notoriety online by uploading videos of him killing cats. So he uploads them onto popular websites. People, you know, now this is where you really got the sense of the internet sleuth. The average person sitting home in their living room connected to the World Wide Web via the internet. And the idea is just the fact that using Usenet groups and message boards and whatnot, they're able to pool their knowledge and investigative skills using the data that is provided in these videos, like the type of bedroom curtains that are in the room, the type of electrical outlet that's in the wall, to narrow down what country this guy is killing him from. And then the story goes off. Lo and behold, they play a very active role in hunting this guy down, to the point where they're reaching out to the police in the specific town to say, you need to go to this area because there's a killer, here's the blah, blah, blah. In the Cecil Hotel docuseries, it really is completely wrapped up in the first episode.
Yeah.
And then the other three episodes are, well, hey, there's a bunch of people that got really interested. Let's talk to them. There is one of the theories they had was that there's a death metal musician who was staying in the hotel, and he's the one that likely killed her as a human sacrifice. Turns out this guy is in another country at the time. This is the dark side to the Don't Fuck with Cats, which is, this is what happens when the internet gets their hands on a mystery and just goes off in many wrong tangents. When the answer is quite obvious, or it's much simpler than the fantastical world.
That was another part of the documentary that bugged me, is so they introduced this death metal guy, Morbid Black Star is the stage name. And yeah, so he had posted a video staying at the Cecil Hotel. He's into death metal, black metal. He shot a video of a woman running through the woods, getting killed at the end of the video. And he had a video that dealt with China. So that was everyone. Well, clearly this guy is guilty. So the documentary sets him up as a sympathetic character because he was attacked online. He ends up losing his social media pages. He loses his YouTube channel. He even loses his email account and ends up trying to kill himself. And so they're showing this. But again, they know he's innocent. They know he wasn't even in the country at the time of her death. But again, they hold that nugget of information. Like they make it seem enough like, yes, this is his story, but he could almost be involved. And then finally at the end, they're like, well, he wasn't even, and he was in Mexico at this time. So I don't know. It's
like they play, they participate, they actively go out of their way to allow you for about an episode and a half to believe that he's actually involved in it.
Like they're trying to make a point by saying like cyberbullying and conspiracy theories are dangerous, but they're also feeding into it at the same time.
Yeah. Or capitalizing it.
Right.
Capitalizing.
Capitulating. And there were some, I mean, there were some horrible people. The hotel manager was a bit horrible. And this is.
Why? Whoa. Okay. Jocelyn says that she was horrible. Jocelyn says she's terrible. You say she's horrible. Why? Because I got the impression that she was actually somebody who genuinely cared about the quality of the product that she was putting out. What was I missing?
First of all, the first thing that struck me, which is odd, is, you know, she mentions that she becomes the general manager of this 700-room hotel after never having worked in the hotel industry before. That, to me, is right off the bat a red flag, because hotel industry is notorious from not hiring people from outside the industry, especially for a building that big. So she is being brought in. I'm telling you exactly why she's being brought in. She's being brought in because she can bring profit to the bottom line.
It's a Skid Row. It's a Skid Row hotel. This is not a fancy Morgantown, West Virginia hotel. This isn't like the Ritz-Carlton in College Station.
Regardless, you will always find someone in the industry to work in a property like that. So I will.
But is that her fault, or is that the management's fault?
I'm saying is you're saying that she really cares about improving the product. My argument is she was probably being brought in because she was a bottom line person, and that was all they were worried about, is how they can make the best bottom line. My other gripe is, you know, she looks at this hotel and she's like, boy, this hotel sucks. Our online review sucks. Everything else. And we're going to create a secondary hotel within the hotel. We're going to take, you know, these three floors and we're going to rebrand it as, you know, whatever.
Stay at Main.
And so that is a way in the industry for you to try and get around actually improving your product, is by just taking a section of your building, rebranding it so it starts out brand new on the review sites. It's a shitty thing to do.
But weren't they restricted by, and this is where what I picked up on was that whomever bought that hotel did not do their proper due diligence, because it was only when they started to look into renovating it did they discover that they were obligated, according to the city code, that they had to allow half of the building to be long-term stay rentals.
Yeah, now, I mean, that's definitely, it definitely handcuffed them as to what they could do with the building. But again, you know, it's a very, I don't know, it's a very unethical way to go around having an old product and having a poor reputation online. And then the final part of it that really bugged me is, you know, when they said, like, you know, she had, Lisa Lamb had gone to the lobby and said, you know, I'm crazy, but it's all right because LA is crazy and whatnot. And, you know, the hotel manager's response was, what am I supposed to call and get help for everyone in my hotel that does that? I mean, yeah, kind of. I mean, I've been in hotels for a number of years. I've had a number of people dealing with mental issues, and your first response should be to get that person help, not just for their safety, but for the safety of your other hotel guests.
Now, was there at any point a photo of the hotel manager on the company website where she's sitting uncomfortably at a table holding a coffee cup?
All right, I've had about enough of you tonight, but we will continue for a little bit longer. We're running a bit long, but we can't.
There's two things we have to talk about.
Can we talk about Rush first?
I feel like you're rushing me, and I'm not appreciative of that.
Texas is still going to be out of power and frozen next week. We know that.
Well, Texas is the reason that the president's dead. Misfits lyric. Sorry.
All right. All right, the time you missed the thing that you're supposed to go to because you went to see the Misfits. That's right. Check your calendar. Anyway, Rush Limbaugh, talk show radio guy, passing away at the age of 70 from cancer. What, you just spill coffee on yourself? Well, it serves you right. And as Brian mentioned earlier, you know, there was a friend of ours on Facebook that posted a tribute to him. Our opinion, very tough to give a tribute to someone that I think was a fairly horrible individual.
Incredibly horrible. No, he's a terrible person.
Just, I mean, again, it's one thing, you know, it's fine if he wanted to have a conservative viewpoint. It's fine that he wanted to push, you know, the far right agenda, whatever. He was a Trump supporter, whatever. But you look at certain things like the fact that he used to read the names of AIDS patients that died on his radio show and ring a bell. He that time he referred to Sandra Fluke as a slut because she wanted birth control provided to women at no cost. He referred to a young Chelsea Clinton as a dog when the Clintons were still in the White House. And then just we have a few of his quotes that he has said over the years. So let's read a few of them. One time he said, "Have you ever noticed how all composite pictures of wanted criminals resemble Jesse Jackson?" He said the NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. The NAACP should have riot rehearsal. They should get a liquor store and practice robberies. He told a African-American female caller, "Take that bone out of your nose and call me back." And then just Obama, he called a African-American an affirmative action candidate repeatedly. Played a song on his show called Barack the Magic Negro. I mean, just Brian's busy knocking over every glass in his office there. But yeah, just a horrible, horrible individual.
He tried to walk this line that you can't, that nobody can succeed at, which is to try to be a commentator on society and trying to be a voice of the people while at the same time being a racist entertainer. And when he would be the racist entertainer, he'd be like, "Oh, I'm just entertaining the people. This is harmless. This is, you know, this is just fun and games. We're just having fun here." But then 5 minutes later, he would be talking about American foreign policy in a manner where he was able to get the ears of millions of Americans who would then listen to his words and go to the polls and vote in a manner where he was directing. There was a time where Rush Limbaugh literally was one of the most important conservative voices in America. I mean, thank God he got cancer and it kind of knocked a little shit into him so that he kind of, you know, the world kind of moved on. Fox News went batshit and embraced the Sean Hannitys, and Rush was no longer as relevant as he was at one point. But he was a terrible human being. I mean, to sit there and to revel in the misery of others, and then to turn around. We talked about it earlier with the fucking conservative snowflakes, where it's just like he literally he enjoyed the misery of others, and then when he got diagnosed with cancer, it was oh, this is something so solemn. This is something we must all be respectful for. And he would and how dare anybody say anything wrong about him because he had stage four fucking cancer.
Yeah, just
fuck him.
Make you a better person. I will also remember when he did so much hillbilly heroin that he lost his hearing. That was classic. And remember when he went through that phase about 20 years ago where he tried to hawk as much cheap excellence in broadcasting shit as he could, like, "Ladies and gentlemen, get the new EIB office chair. It's got my logo right on the back of the chair. Get the new EIB pen. Like, he really was like...
Oh, he did merchandising?
Oh, he did in late 90s.
Oh, that's shameless. So that's much fucking... I hate when places decide that they're going to start hawking their merchandise. It is shameless. It's disrespectful. It waters down the brand.
Exactly. Thankfully, we would never resort to anything like that. All right. That's Rush. We got that in. Texas hit with a snowstorm earlier this week.
Hold on. Before we go to Texas, can we talk about the other celebrity deaths? Because I do believe that there is cause to celebrate this week in Rush's death. Put me up on the board.
Yes, Brian did finally get points on the 2021 Ron and Brian death pool. Gets 30 points for that. But who is in first place in the death pool now?
Ron, listen. We know that you are the master of death. I'm surprised you don't have Elisa Lam on there back in 2017.
You never know. You never know. Who else did we lose this week, Brian?
Oh, this one hurt.
It did.
As I think you guys all know how much I love early hip hop. This week we lost Mark Anthony Morales. A lot of people may be sitting there right now saying, who the fuck is Mark Anthony Morales? Well, I'm about to tell you and I'm going to shut you up. He's better known by the stage name as Prince Marky D of the rap group, The Fat Boys, pioneering group that gained fame in the 1980s.
Yep.
Such hits as The Fat Boys Are Black, was on the Crushing soundtrack. I mean, just everything you ever wanted. Also, co-star of, what was the movie that they did? Disorderlies.
Oh, my God.
Disorderlies. Oh, where the fat boys take care of a wealthy white man. God, that movie was embarrassingly bad. But holy shit, as a fan of hip-hop in the mid-1980s, was it great to be able to see the fat boys up there.
Well, rest in peace, Prince Marky D. Now, do you want to talk Texas?
Is that all we lost? I thought we lost somebody else.
Nicki Minaj's dad got hit.
Don't care.
But we don't really
don't
know.
Don't care.
I think that was about it this week. I think
that was. So let's go to Texas, because I think if there's anything to close out is to once again just revel in the misery of hypocrites.
And I think what is important to point out is that the moment that Texas and I think Oklahoma as well declared states of emergencies, that President Biden committed funds and resources to them, even though he did not win either state. So it is very refreshing to see a president that does not punish individuals that do not vote for him. Very refreshing after the last 4 years.
We shouldn't use the last 4 years as a barometer of proper behavior.
So, you know, Texas gets hit hard with a winter storm on Sunday and Monday. And it resulted in such a strain on the power grid in Texas. A lot of people are believing that it is a result of like down power lines and things like that. That is not the case. The power is literally needed to be turned off because of frozen natural gas lines, frozen power grids, things of that nature. So you have people in freezing cold conditions, unable to run the heat in their homes, pipes bursting, people not able to get clean water. A photo I saw of like a group of like 20 Texans around this faucet in like a field trying to get water because they can't drink their own water. The governor is blaming the Green New Deal, even though most of his state is, you know, heated by oil and natural gas. You've got Rick Perry saying that, you know, Texans are willing to suffer rather than have to fall under federal guidelines. Because, again, it's also important to note that Texas deregulated their power grid and privatized it. So it's
no longer depending on under government control, and it's no longer connected to the U.S. National power grid. So they're not able to take excess power from neighboring states.
So in Oklahoma, where again they experience similar weather, not the same issue because, yes, they can redirect power from other states into Oklahoma. Janelle mentions a friend is using snow for water, boiling it. Yeah, I mean, it's people are in a bad way. I think 37 people have died so far. Like, they're literally finding people frozen to death in the streets in Texas right now. And then to top that all off, everyone.
This was the piece de resistance.
Everyone.
And by the way, hold on. Before we jump to this.
Sorry.
Fuck you, Texas. Not everybody in Texas. There's some very nice people in Texas. But it was not 2 weeks ago that both senators from Texas announced support, along with 20 congressmen from Texas, for a bill that was being introduced for Texas to secede from the American Union because they did not want to be part of America anymore.
And they don't have to be.
And then when they got a little cold air, a lack of water, now suddenly they're reaching out to the federal government for their assistance. And Biden sat there and said, here you go, have it.
But everyone's favorite Zodiac killer senator, Ted Cruz,
whose wife is so fucking ugly,
was seen early this morning with his wife and family boarding a plane to go down to Cancun.
No. He flew down yesterday.
Was it yesterday? I thought it was last night.
Yesterday he flew down. Today he flew back.
And again, in true Ted Cruz fashion, he normally will blame his wife or his father or whatever. Blamed the kids.
Oh, you piece of shit.
In wanting to go to Cancun. Like, my mom wouldn't take me to McDonald's when I was a kid. But yeah, Ted Cruz is going to fly to Cancun because his kids want to go. But yes,
he threw his kids under the bus to try to avoid taking any responsibility. What a piece of garbage.
But what's even more hilarious is he did fly back, and it was funny on Twitter watching people track him literally. Ted is checked into his flight. Ted is on standby for business class. I mean, it was fucking hilarious.
Oh, it was amazing.
But like, friends, quote unquote, friends of the Cruises were now sharing texts from his wife, Heidi, saying like, oh, the house is freezing. We're going to go down to Cancun. The Ritz-Carlton's only $309 a night. Do you want to go down with us? Like, so just automatically debunking this shit.
Yes. The lies. Just what I find amazing, and I shouldn't. We're talking politicians. We're talking Republicans who literally have spent the past 4 years embracing the lie as the go-to answer at all opportunities. But it's the fact is that how is it that when you've got you've got probably some of like the statewide worst weather you've had in generations. You know, they've not had snowstorms like this. They've not had cold weather like this. They've never been as unprepared for something like this. That your senator who has contacts, enough pull, and he is a rather high-ranking senator, that instead of sitting there and saying, I need to spend all my time trying to help my constituents, sat there and just said, you know what? Fuck it. It's cold. I'm going to go fly somewhere warmer.
I mean, more than that, even if
he... And when called out on it, just immediately denied it. Immediately sat there. And how many hours went by after photos of him on the plane had already been circulated that you still couldn't get an acknowledgement from his staff whether that was actually him or not?
Yeah, there was another GOP politician from Texas that was like, well, you've seen the photos. He's down in Cancun. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, even if he could not do anything for his state, at what point does he say, well, maybe me going to Mexico at this point is just bad optics?
Send the wife. Send the kids. Right. You don't have to go.
I think that's one of the worst things in politics right now is the lack of accountability that politicians are willing to take. Like Governor Abbott not taking accountability for the privatization of the Texas power grid as being part of the problem. No, he's going to blame AOC and
and
wind turbines and things of that nature. Meanwhile, they put out reports that the wind turbines in Texas were producing at higher outputs than even projected normally.
Is there any
natural gas and oil that is failing and electricity that is failing them right now?
But Ron, of all the states in this union, is there anybody believing that Texas is getting their energy from wind turbines as opposed to gas and natural gas that's coming out of the ground? They're the least eco-friendly state of the union.
It's just shocking to me that you have a state where so many people own big trucks and now can't seem to get around in the snow.
It is the state of politics in this country that politicians get up there, and instead of sitting there focusing on how to make things better or taking responsibility, it's automatically a who do I blame? It's the blame is here, the blame is there, the blame is over there, but heaven forbid it rests with me.
Right. And don't get us wrong. The lack of accountability is on both sides of the aisle. Like, we see you, Governor Cuomo, not wanting to take accountability for the nursing home deaths from COVID. We see your administration hiding things from the previous administration.
He's not actually owning up to it.
No.
He's just saying like, oh, well, you know, you have to understand, you know, like it was a very political time and the numbers were really high. And, you know, the White House was really, you know, pointing to us for poor management and we were trying to get a... No.
Yeah.
You lied about the number of deaths. Own it.
People died on Governor Cuomo's watch that probably didn't need to die because of the way the nursing homes were handled. People are dying in Texas that probably don't need to die because of the way that people like Governor Abbott and Ted Cruz run their state. But no one wants to man up and take responsibility for their own actions. It's always somebody else's fault.
But and I will say this, we have to blame ourselves as the electorate because we don't hold our elected officials accountable.
True.
The people in Texas are going to reelect Ted Cruz. They're
right.
going to erect reelect Gavin Newsom, their governor down there, Rick Perry. What's the guy's name?
Greg Abbott.
Never would have guessed it. New York is absolutely going to reelect Cuomo. There's absolutely nobody who has the balls to go up against him. So it's like, show me a reason why politicians should sit there, stand up and say, oh yeah, no, I fucked up.
This is the amazing thing. Like Ted Cruz was reelected in a very tight reelection race back in 2020. He did Beto O'Rourke. So you've got Ted Cruz hopping on a plane, getting the fuck out of Texas. You've got Beto O'Rourke organizing phone banks to reach out to senior citizens and people in need, finding out what people needed, finding senior citizens that hadn't eaten in 72 hours and connecting them with resources, you know, getting fundraising for the homeless organizations in Texas that, you know, put homeless people up in hotels during this time so they can stay warm. So this is a guy, you know, Beto O'Rourke, that Texas was like, oh, we're not going to elect you. He's still out there helping the people of Texas. While the guy that they did elect is like, there's a bit of a draft in my den, so I need to get the fuck out of the country.
Yeah. And who's such a piece of shit that he threw his daughters under the bus instead of taking responsibility for it. I would have had more respect for him had he said, listen, it was really fucking cold, and I'm worried about my family, and I said, let's get out of here.
Well,
I'd have more respect for him if he was honest.
To be fair, we've seen how his daughters feel about him. Like, I remember that video from when he was running for president in 2016, and he came off of like his bus and tried to give like his daughter a kiss on the cheek, and she was like, nope. So he's like, fuck it, my daughters hate me already, so I might as well just shit on them if I can protect myself.
There is an age where as a daughter you no longer want to get a kiss from your father. It's a little weird.
He didn't defend his wife or his dad against the shit Donald Trump said against him.
He's a piece of shit.
He's not going to, he has no issue, you know, using his daughters for his political gain.
Nope, not at all.
I'm done venting about Ted Cruz in Texas.
Fuck Ted Cruz. Can we just call this episode Fuck Ted Cruz?
I mean, that might get us kicked off of Google, but we can see what we can do.
But we're not done yet.
No, because we're running long.
In 15 minutes, we have After Dark. Ron, do you want to tell people what we have as After? What is After Dark?
After Dark is a little bit more risque, which, I mean, if you've seen this episode, you're like, how much more risque could it get? Oh, my friends, you have no idea. You would have to really go back and listen to some of the older ones to find out. But if you go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, upper right-hand corner of the screen, you will see a button to become a patron. Ron's level or higher, get access to the live After Dark. Otherwise, you do get the recording afterwards. But you want to be cool like the rest of the kids and join us live in about 15 minutes. So if you go to our Patreon right now, sign up. We will get you that link. You can join us tonight. The final Thursday of every month is our big Patreon pajama party where we get our listeners to join us in. But yeah, just and there's free swag. There's, you know, mugs. There's hoodies. There's organic tote bags. There's stickers. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that you get also on top of the top-notch entertainment and the fact that you are giving us money that we put right back into this fine program. Brian, anything else for this week before we go and get ready for After Dark?
I cannot wait for After Dark.
All right, let's do this. For the folks in Texas, stay warm, stay safe. Ted Cruz,
boil all your snow.
Rush Limbaugh, stay dead.
Fuck you.
And that's about it. So we're going to roll on out of here. After Dark, folks, we'll catch you in a few minutes. Everybody else, we will see you next week.